USN, a game of loaded questions. What's the toughest game on BYU football's schedule in 2025? Which game is the trap game? We'll dive into the schedule superlatives for the upcoming season. BYU football radio analyst Hans Olsen discusses which quarterback he believes has the inside track to start week one and how that quarterback change impacts win-loss expectations this season.
After picking up another four-star commitment, is BYU football pacing for their best recruiting class in program history? And the latest Deep Blue featuring BYU runner Casey Klinger on how he was able to accomplish the goal of winning a national championship at BYU.
Welcome to BYU Sports Nation, presented by the BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere. Happy Thursday, July 3rd. I am Spencer Linton alongside a beat farmer in training, Jason Shepherd.
Look, and apparently the person now that we need to go to for all of the beet farming advice is none other than Richie Saunders.
Yeah, it's not Dwight Schrute.
No.
It's Richie Saunders.
Look, my first question is, has he given up on the potato? Has he moved from the potato to the beet?
He's all vegetables all the time, Jason.
So, yeah, look, his dad posted on social media him holding a beet that apparently he grew.
Let's read the caption, shall we? His dad said the following, almost as gratifying as Richie's efforts on the court are his efforts in the garden. He's got a green thumb, after all. The real question, did he actually eat the beet? End quote. We'll never know. Great mysteries from the Saunders family.
Beet fan?
I can handle a few beats. I wouldn't call myself a fan.
I don't believe I've ever intentionally eaten a beet.
You've had the unintentional consumption.
Well, I don't know. I mean, maybe it may have snuck into something and my pickiness overlooked it somehow. But yeah, I can't say that I willingly have eaten a beet.
They're healthy. They're not bad. It's good for you.
I know a lot of people like
beet. Big health guy.
I am a big health guy. That doesn't mean I'm going to drink beet juice.
Fair enough. Well, you're never going to be a beet farmer then.
Clearly not.
Bears, beets, Battlestar Galactica, and BYU Sports. All rise and shout. Let's get to what's trending.
Current BYU football schedule. Iowa State is tough after Utah. We're going to have to be road warriors. An Alamo Bowl rematch.
I don't know why BYU Utah's on October 18th.
And they go, well,
Cougar Nation's going to show up at all this early.
We are football farmers, that is for sure. And today we are digging up.
How does that work?
The BYU football schedule superlatives. I don't know. It was a reach, Jason. It was a reach.
With Spencer out here on the North 40 planting footballs in the growing season.
Indeed. We have to keep things interesting, right? You got to plant the seed on July 3rd so that it sprouts into something beautiful in late fall, Jason.
I know.
The schedule superlatives on the mind today because, well, Big 12 media days are right around the corner, and we've been thinking a lot about what BYU is going to face in year three of Big 12 play. So let's look at the 2025 schedule and ask the following, beginning with this question, Jason. What is the game you have circled on BYU's schedule second, of course, after the rivalry game against Utah?
Yeah, we're assuming that everybody's going to circle that one first because of the rivalry game. I actually went with Utah's real rival, Colorado. So I went with the Buffaloes for a couple of different reasons. Okay. Number one, it's the conference opener, and that's going to be something that we all look forward to, especially depending on how the non-conference season goes, and we anticipate it going well. Regardless of how the quarterback situation plays out, I think it sets up nicely for BYU to begin Big 12 play playing good football. So that's the one I've got circled. Plus, you also have the rematch of the bowl game from last year. Now, certainly a very, very different team for Colorado, specifically on the offensive side, than what BYU faced last time. But that's the one that I've got circled. What about you?
Hard not to be excited about the Big 12 opener that you bring up. For me, it comes after a bye and into November against a team that spent a lot of money and a lot of time and NIL interest to make their football team and athletic department better, and that is Texas Tech. Jason, I think the Red Raiders could be a very, very good football team and kind of expect them to be somewhere in the top three or four teams of the 16-team Big 12 conference. BYU's got to go on the road to Lubbock. But again, it's after a bye.
Right.
What can BYU do with an extra week of preparation to handle Lubbock, which I hear is a fantastic college game day experience? So I'm excited about that as well. But I think the challenge is going to be significant for what might be a top 25 foe that BYU faces. And what are the Cougars in November? Because remember, BYU ran into some trouble late in the season. They ran out of gas. They survived Utah and then ended up losing to Kansas and Arizona State. This is a huge game in early November, a statement opportunity for BYU. So I've got that game circled as a massive challenge for BYU.
I like that one. All right, our next superlative. BYU's toughest game on the schedule is what?
I believe we have a consensus here.
Yes, we do. This one was to us, this one was pretty easy.
At Iowa State, late October, you look at where the game falls in the schedule as well. So BYU will have just hosted Utah. You have to turn around after that emotional entourage or whatever, emotional explosion of feelings and the rivalry, and then you have to go to Ames and play in front of 59,000 screaming Cyclone fans. This is a team that BYU didn't play last year. I wish they would have had an opportunity to play Iowa State. Didn't finally get it, but it's on the road in what I believe is, next to Lavelle Edwards Stadium, probably the most raucous crowd in the entire Big 12 conference.
Yeah, it's a situation there. I think the environment plays such a massive role into the argument as it being the toughest game. And I understand that from an offensive standpoint, Iowa State, they're top couple of receivers drafted in the NFL this year, but you still have Rocco Becht. I believe in what they have done, and I believe in what they did last year and carrying over. And the fact that it is a road game later in the year and you have to go to Ames in that environment
that
you
spoke of. They just have so much continuity, and their head coach, Matt Campbell, is fantastic.
Yeah, they've got so much going for them, especially when they're at home. And on top of it, they're going to be a good football team this year. To me, that's the toughest one.
I can already hear some Big 12 schools saying Iowa State has the best home environment. Texas Tech is angry about that. Kansas State is angry about that. Not saying that those aren't great environments, but Iowa State consistently, Jason, really loud and very difficult to win in that stadium. Okay,
yep.
Next superlative. The most winnable conference for BYU in the Big 12.
This also was a consensus for you and I, and we both went with the final game of the regular season, a home game in November, when the boys from Orlando come across the country to the altitude and, in all likelihood, very cold temperatures and possibly snow. It's UCF.
Just like I felt about Houston having to do the same thing last year against BYU in the final regular season game. You got to leave South Texas where it's warm and comfortable, and you got to play at 4,500 feet, and it's 36 degrees and just uncomfortable. Yeah, what is UCF, too? I think it's awesome that they have Scott Frost back at the helm, because he led them to one of their greatest seasons and moments in UCF football history, but it's going to take a while for him to build back up. Late season in Provo, yeah. If I'm playing in Orlando most of the time and I got to go to Provo on November, whatever it is, 30th, ugh.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
I want no part of that. So I think that's the most winnable Big 12 game. Again, this does not include non-conference. This is, as far as superlatives go, the most winnable Big 12 game. You and I agree, UCF.
All right. In honor of Admiral Akbar, the biggest trap game, who you got?
It's a trap.
That's not bad.
I love it. This one I struggled with a little bit because I think there are a few real solid options on this, which is not great. I don't like thinking like, oh, that could be a trap game. That could be a trap. Ooh, that could be a trap game too. But I centered on BYU in Tucson at Arizona. And here's why. Because I feel like BYU is going to be a clear favorite. And in the Kalani Sitake era, BYU has had their way with Arizona. Hasn't mattered where the game is played, whether it's in Provo, in Tucson, or in Las Vegas at a neutral site. Kalani and BYU have just figured out Arizona. But because you start to maybe think that way a little bit, like, I'm not worried about it. Well, Arizona's supposed to be one of the worst teams in the conference. It's kind of a weird place to play at times. If and what if Brett Brennan can he can manage to build some confidence in that program. Let's say that they win a game or two that they weren't supposed to win early in the season. Now they're playing with some confidence. You get BYU at home. That game scares me a little bit. I hope that the dominance from Satake and BYU continues, but that to me is the biggest trap game.
Yeah, for me, the answer, this will be the first game outside of a Big 12 game that I'm going to go with. For the trap game, I've got at East Carolina.
Okay.
And for a couple of different reasons. Number one, it is your final non-conference game. You do have that game to begin conference play at Colorado. But I believe, and it's something that we've talked about on this show, when you look at the way the non-conference schedule begins, you've got Portland State at home, you've got Stanford at home, BYU should win both of those, and I think BYU not only should win both of those, but I think you come out of those feeling pretty good about the way things have gone, but then you got to go on the road all the way out to East Carolina as your final non-conference game.
I know BYU fans have some PTSD from what happened in 2017.
Yes, and I know that those games don't mean anything now, but from a fan base, we have a long memory of all these games previously, and East Carolina has knocked BYU off a couple of times in the last decade plus. And so I think, for me, that's the one that I look at as a trap game before you start conference play.
Beware Greenville, North Carolina. Here's why I didn't pick that game. BYU has a bye before it.
Right.
And in the coaching staff, specifically Jay Hill and his defense, I trust with an extra week of preparation. That was the only thing, because I initially went there with you. Like, oh, man, East Carolina just feels super weird. But they have a bye week, so that's why I opted for Arizona.
Okay.
Let's keep it rolling. Best road trip available for BYU fans this season.
This one was a tough one, but I ultimately landed on Texas Tech.
Lubbock!
But it's less about Lubbock, and it's more about the venue.
Yeah.
I was very impressed with Texas Tech's campus when I was there with women's basketball this past year. The campus is beautiful. It is unbelievable. And because you have the environment that we expect to see at Texas Tech with them being good, and we know how that translates in terms of the fan base and how they'll react, but then you also have the tortillas and all of the stuff that goes along with it.
I was hoping you'd bring that up.
You got the carbo loading, the carb loading. So I ultimately went with the game at Texas Tech.
Okay. I like that. I'm just super excited that there's a nonstop flight on Southwest from Lubbock to Salt Lake City the day after the game. Okay, mark that, BYU
fans. Yeah, because if you go Delta, you got to go to DFW and then over to Lubbock.
Delta doesn't even fly into Lubbock.
I did it.
Oh, you did it?
I did it.
How did you do that?
Well, maybe it was Southwest.
Yeah,
maybe
I don't think it was Delta.
All I know is I had to go through DFW to get there.
Jason apparently has a different luxury of travel.
Now I'm second guessing if it was actually Delta.
My best road trip. And I know some of you are going to go, huh? Just hear me out. At Colorado. And if you have not watched a game on that campus with that facade and the unique setup of the stadium, which, by the way, has been recently renovated. It's beautiful. It's late September. There's a huge contingent of BYU fans and alumni in the Denver Metroplex. Didn't you feel it during the NCAA Men's Basketball Championship?
Yeah.
BYU fans will find a way into this stadium. It's going to be an awesome road trip experience. Love the facade, the campus, the buildings. And there's going to be a revenge factor for Colorado after what BYU did to the Buffaloes in the Alamo Bowl. I think that is a fascinating road trip. It should be gorgeous weather, too.
Yeah.
75 degrees. It's a late kick. A lot of eyeballs on the game. Coach Prime in there. Yeah, I like BYU's Big 12 opener at Colorado for a lot of excitement.
As crazy as it sounds, for as close as we live to that area, and as many times as I've been to Denver, countless times, including last weekend I was in Denver, I've never been to Boulder. So I'm excited to check out Boulder.
I watched your boy Chase Daniel, former Chiefs quarterback, destroy Colorado when he was at Missouri.
That's right.
In that stadium.
That's right. That's right. Should we do a countdown, by the way?
You know what? Hit it!
Countdown to the Vikings.
58 days away from BYU hosting Portland State.
58. Sub 60.
I know. And this is the game. This is the game.
Yeah.
Okay. Fall camp right around the corner. Our question of the day. Which game do you believe is the toughest on BYU football's schedule in 2025? at @Reich_BYU on X answers. Having to go to Iowa State right after playing Utah seems the toughest to me. They agree with us.
Yep.
You'll have the physicality and emotions of the Utah game the week before and then travel and have to play in a tough road environment against a good team. Rough stuff, they say. Weigh in on X, Facebook, and Instagram.
Okay, after picking up the commitment from another four-star recruit earlier this week, BYU football now has the 25th ranked 2026 recruiting class in the nation.
Oh.
This according to 24/7 Sports, and the 22nd ranked class according to ESPN.
Even better.
Even better. Do you expect this recruiting class to be the best ever?
Yes. Momentum is real, Jason. And to remind everyone, the best class that BYU had in the modern era before what they are currently putting out there was in 2010 at number 30. That was the Jake Heaps, Zach Stout, Ross Oppo group. They're five spots higher than that right now. I don't see anything that can happen this late in the game that is going to all of a sudden have BYU leapfrogged by six
yep.
or seven teams. I just don't see it.
Yeah, you and I are on the same page there. I the answer, yes, unequivocally, I think it'll be the best for the reason that you just said. I don't see anything happening that's going to drop BYU so significantly that they'll drop below 30.
This is going to be the best
yes.
class ever
yes.
in the modern era.
And congratulations to the hard work this staff is putting in. And look, it also is reassuring that all of those years that we said, just wait until BYU gets into to a power conference and look at all the things that they'll be able to do. Look what they're doing now.
Yes.
Imagine what they could do with X, Y, and Z. Well, now we're seeing it.
Let's go. Okay, we expect history from BYU football as far as recruiting goes.
All right, BYU Sports Nation will have live coverage from Big 12 Football Media Days next week from the Star in Frisco, Texas. Tune in on Tuesday, June 8th, and Wednesday, July 9th, beginning at, that would be July 8th and July 9th,
yes.
beginning at noon Eastern time on BYU TV and BYU Radio.
I knew what you were saying.
Yeah.
After the break, BYU Football Radio analyst Hans Olsen joins the program. Who does he think has the inside track to start a quarterback for BYU? And how many wins or losses difference does he see because of that quarterback change? This is BYU SN.
Well, now there is a quarterback battle. I really, truly believe in the offensive weapons around whoever is going to be the quarterback.
BYU's not in dire straits, people might think. And I don't think this changes the number of games they win.
We are live at Studio B. This is your day-to-day BYU Sports play-by-play. I am Spencer Linton alongside Jason Shepard. Hope you're all preparing for a fantastic 4th of July holiday. We can't think of a better way to move into the weekend than by inviting a guy who understands good barbecue and good fireworks and certainly good football. He is Hans Olsen of KSL Sports Zone and our BYU football radio analyst. Hans, happy early July 4th.
Man, this is my favorite holiday, Thanksgiving and 4th of July, where you just shove your face full of the best types of food. I've already got the smoker piping smoke through, and I've got a brisket actually on the smoker. We're getting ready for 4th of July, and we've got a full day at the pool set. Like 4th of July with the food and the family and the patriotic, all the salutes, and it's as good as it gets. So I'm excited, boys.
What time are we supposed
to
show up?
I was going to say, it sounds like we need to show up at your house.
Well, let me tell you, if you show up past one, it'll all be gone. it might not, because my son Tommy Rock is now on a mission, and his 335-pound frame won't be porking down my brisket. So I might have a little extra for you.
Duly noted. All right. Well, naturally, we mentioned, you know, your football along with holidays and barbecue. So let's start there with the current edition of the BYU Cougars, who now are in search of a new quarterback after the seemingly imminent transfer of Jake Retzlaff. We await news there. So how do you assess what is happening at the quarterback situation and the battle that will ensue to be BYU's QB1?
Well, if anything, it's entertainment, boys. And that's what football is supposed to be. This is full entertainment, and it should be entertaining for BYU fans. Yeah, nerve-wracking. Yeah, a little bit worrying. Yeah, but very entertaining. And I'm anticipating this camp more than I've anticipated a camp in a long time, because watching Trayson, McKay, and Bear all go at it to figure out 1, 2, and 3 on a depth chart is actually really exciting for me, guys.
When you look at the three players that, you know, are in the mix for this, with a little under a month away from the start of fall camp, who do you believe, as of today, has the inside track for the job?
Well, I would say McKay Hillstead, because he's an in-state product. He's got D1 starting background. I'm sure Aaron Roderick's more familiar with him because he grew up here in Sky Ridge, and Roderick is very aware of every quarterback in the state, and I'm sure knows all of his upside and all of his pitfalls and is probably aware of him. And I think McKay's probably very aware of Aaron. So I think there's probably a relationship that's been around for a long time. And then I would go with Trayson, probably Borgay, number two, because he came in, he's had some D1 experience, and he's got some overall experience. And Aaron Roderick's probably pretty familiar with his game. But then you've got the unknown in Bear Bachmeier. And a couple of interesting things about Bear Bachmeier. One thing that I found out when I was just watching some film was his brother's Hank Bachmeier. And for those of you that don't know who Hank Bachmeier is, a lot of BYU fans should, because I think they saw him play against BYU maybe.
In 2021, but, and he ruined BYU's 5-0 start to the season, Hans.
That's right. So Hank Bachmeier is very familiar with, you know, BYU, and I'm sure BYU fans are very familiar with Hank. Well, that's the family. So good things and bad things. Number one, Hank ended up playing for 3 different universities. So there was kind of a back and forth where Taylen Green started to come on at Boise State. He was sharing some responsibilities. He ended up at Louisiana Tech, left Louisiana Tech and transferred to Wake Forest and finished out Wake Forest. So played for 3 schools. And here Bear is already on his 2nd school, coming from Stanford now to BYU. And, you know, I always kind of squint and hesitate, like, okay, well, what's his commitment? When the going gets tough, does he get going or does he leave? And if he shows up and he's 2-3 weeks into camp and he's still 3 deep on the depth chart, how does he react? How does he handle his business? Does he straighten up? Does he say, it doesn't matter, I'm not going anywhere, I'll fight through whatever I got to fight through? Or does he say, well, I'm gonna transfer? So we're going to see. He's going to be tested because he's not going to be given this job. I do think that he's got some of the potentially the best upside. I think he could be maybe the best of the 3, but he's going to have to fight through some really hard times, and he's going to have to say to himself, I'm not going anywhere. This is my final destination. It doesn't matter. If I'm finished 3rd on this depth chart, I'm staying and I'm going to fight, because that's the attitude that you've got to carry into this fight. So it's good. I do think McKay's probably got the inside track. Right now I've got Trayson Borgay as number 2, and then I've got Bear as the dark horse with the upside. 6'2", 230 pounds. He was at one point rated as the number 11th quarterback in the entire country by On3 and some other sites. So he's got tremendous background. And then I was watching film of him this morning. I've been getting ready for Big 12 Media Days. I leave for that coming up on Monday. And I want to be able to answer some good questions about him. So I was watching some film. And, you know, he's good. He's good. He set every crazy high school record you could think of. And he was all thing high school that you could ever imagine. He could run and outrun anybody. He could outshift anybody. And he threw well on the run. He throws fades on the run really well, throws fades off his back foot. He's got a lot of arm power. So a lot to take in there, guys, but we're working on it, making sure that we get BYU fans the best information we can.
Hans Olsen, already hard at work, KSL Sports Zone BYU football radio analyst. Understandably, there are many in the fan base, not saying all of them or even a certain percentage, Hans, but a strong enough contingent that I felt it on social media that said, wait, BYU has to make a quarterback change now? Well, there goes the season. How are your expectations shifting because of this quarterback battle and the unexpected shift for QB1 at BYU?
Well, I would say, you know, you've got the contingent that's on one side of the scale that's like, oh, well, I think we're going to be better off. And I think we can improve on 57.9% completion rating. And I think that the quarterbacks we've got are better than Jake Retzlaff. You've got those people. And then you got the doomsdayer that is currently digging a bunker in their backyard, and, you know, getting ready for the complete fallout. So you've got these two opposite ends of the spectrum. You know, I'm probably right in that 7-8 mark. I think this could cost you a couple games, two or three games. I think that Jake Retzlaff had incredible leadership, and he had an incredible drive and desire. Even that Arizona State game, you know, BYU's down 3 touchdowns, and Jake Retzlaff believed, and I was in the booth calling the game. I believed. Like, I was like, geez, I think that there's a real good chance here, and there was a final drive, and there was a throw that was probably two, maybe three yards too far inside. I think it was to JoJo Phillips.
Yeah.
That, you know, if that thing's just a little bit further outside, that's complete, and this game is completely changed. He was a gamer, and he brought a lot of belief to the field. And I've been on fields with quarterbacks that have crazy belief and that a team believes in, you know, whether it's Brandon Dolman in that 2000 season, my senior season, where he brings us back against Utah for Lavelle's last miracle, an incredible win, or it's on the field with Peyton Manning, who could absolutely command a huddle, or Joe Germain, who was one of my favorite quarterbacks to play with, and I was playing center at that time. These quarterbacks have more responsibility than just, oh, he's got a good arm, or, oh, he's low percentage passing rate. Oh, he runs well. Like, there is a lot that goes into a great quarterback, and Retzlaff had a lot of those intangibles. He just had this belief that when he stepped in the huddle, everybody thought, okay, we can do this. We can win. We're behind, but we can win. So I worry about it. I'm a seven and a half on that, you know, in crazy delusional to crazy digging bunker scale. I think that BYU is still on track to have a phenomenal season based off the defensive return. But I do have a little bit of worry.
Hans, how much do you believe that whoever ultimately ends up with the starting quarterback job will be helped out with the offense and the offensive weapons that are back and around him this year? How much do you think that the production that comes back and the type of players that will be around them can help overcome some of the inexperience, at least on the field as a BYU Cougar, that we may see?
I think it can help tremendously. And you know, the reason I don't panic in these situations, there's a couple of reasons, but one of the main reasons, I don't panic much with Aaron Roderick. I just don't, and I don't know if that's because he's an old teammate of mine. I don't know what it is. I have a belief in Aaron Roderick. You know, I was just talking about the belief that a quarterback brings to a locker room or to a huddle. Aaron Roderick kind of brings that belief to me with the offense. He always has. And Fessy Satake the same. So there's that. And then I do believe there's going to be a good run game. I truly believe that Waylon Lapuaho is one of the best interior linemen that BYU's ever had. And I believe that Sonny Maccasini and Austin Leusa, I think that they're going to be fantastic on the interior. I know that you guys are going to ask me about players that are going to surface as big-time contributors, and I'll throw this in early before I get to the others. I think Isaiah Ajada could possibly surface as a fantastic bookend. So excited to see Isaiah Ajada take the next step. I have a lot of belief in it, guys. And then you throw LJ Martin in there, and the next guy that I expect to have a breakout season, Sione Moa. And I don't – that's why it holds me at a good 7.5. Just – you know, I'm close, getting close to an 8. And when I'm at a fall camp and I'm watching McKay Hillstead, who I've got a lot of belief in, I actually do. I was just watching film of him against JMU in 2023. And you go watch the film, you know, he broke every Utah State freshman record in that game against James Madison. 400 yards, four touchdowns. Can't remember the completion percentage, but it was solid. So I've got a lot of belief in him. But camp will tell. But to your point, Chip, I trust Aaron Roderick a lot. I trust L.J. Martin a lot. I trust Chase Roberts, Parker Kingston, and JoJo Phillips a lot. And I'm more optimistic than I am concerned, for sure.
Hans Olsen is on BYU Sports Nation. We'll finish with this, and you alluded to it. What other players do you want to throw into the list that deserve the moniker of breakout potential?
Well, I sat down with Kalani Sitake for like 2.5 or 3 hours. Bless his heart. The guy can fight through a 2-hour conversation with me. He can fight through anything. But this was just a week ago or 2 weeks ago. And I talk about each individual player with him just to get ready for the season and then to get ready for a couple of bits that Scotty and I do. And the guy that I could see his eyebrows lift and he got the most excited about was Ciale Acera.
Oh, yeah.
And it's a guy that I know people are kind of familiar with the name, but I think it's a guy that people better get really excited about and be ready to be the staple. Because if teams know what are good for them, they aren't going to try to get their quarterback outside the pocket because Jack Kelly will rip them in half and Isaiah Glasgow will chase them down and they will destroy them on the edges. I think that Jack is going to be a problem off the edge in different pass rushing. I think Glasgow is going to put pressure and force plays back inside. And I think Ciale Acera is a better linebacker than Harrison Taggart. And I think that that is probably the reason you saw Harrison Taggart enter into the transfer portal. And I fully expect Ciale Acera to show BYU fans and to show his team why he is kind of looked at as the next one. He's good, guys. He's good. His legs are under him. He's working his butt off. He is strong. He's fast. He's healthy. And I can't wait to see Ciale Acera. And then the other one that coming out of spring ball that I was really excited about is Sione Moa. You guys watched him run through spring ball. He is built like a bowling ball. He is tough to bring down. You know who he reminds me of? An old teammate of mine, his name was Mark Yatawaya, and he now coaches running backs. And he is kind of the Mark Yatawaya body type slash usage slash ability. A bowling ball-like, very quick and shifty figure. I don't think that he gets in the open field and goes Ronnie Jenkins on you, but I do think that he lowers his head and delivers a Manasseh Tonga-like devastation.
Yes.
So I am thrilled to see Sione Moa take his next step. So L.J. Martin and Sione in the duel in the backfield are going to be great. Ciale Acera, and then the other one that I talked about earlier is Isaiah Jada. BYU needs him to be a breakout player. I need him to be a breakout player. As you guys know, offensive tackle play in the Big 12, and I've stated this now a couple years of really watching the Big 12, offensive tackle play, I think, is the most consistent, most usable, and most important position in the Big 12 that I've nailed down to this point. I think that it's a conference that's loaded with great offensive tackle play. And it's a conference that's loaded with great edge rush. So you better have great offensive tackle play. If Jada doesn't surface and if they struggle to find those bookends, even with the interior three that I mentioned, it could be a problem. But I've got I've got high hopes for Isaiah Jada. We saw him when he rotated in. He looked good, guys.
Yeah.
He looked good at the back end of last season. But I miss Connor Pay, man.
We all do.
I miss Caleb Etienne. Like those guys were security blankets. I could snuggle up with them and eat barbecue with them and talk fat guy talk with them. And, you know, it was the best. I'm going to miss those guys. And and I'm optimistic again, but a little bit skeptical. But then you know, TJ Woods, guys, he blew up on the scene too, didn't he? With his offensive line coaching ability.
Indeed. Hance, this is the perfect way to end this conversation with Snuggles and barbecue.
Yeah, we'll be over there tomorrow. We'll see you.
We appreciate the time and the insight, brother. Great stuff. We'll talk to you soon. Happy 4th.
See you guys. Happy 4th of July.
Great stuff from Hance. If you miss any interviews, shows, or deep blues, you can find them on BYUSN.com or download the BYU TV app to get all the BYU Sports Nation content on demand.
BYU football jumps into the top 25 of recruiting rankings for 2026, plus Delaney Gibb put on a show for Team Canada women's basketball. What exactly did she do? We'll tell you next in headlines on BYU Sports Nation.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Welcome back to Studio B. I am Spencer Linton. He is Jason Shepherd. Let's roll out your Thursday headlines.
We talked about this earlier in the program. After a four-star commitment earlier this week, BYU football's 2026 recruiting class rankings jumped up to 22nd. According to ESPN, and 25th overall in the country, according to 24/7 Sports. Of note, BYU's highest class ranking in the modern era was 30th overall back in 2010.
I enjoy being in the top 25, as I'm sure you do, Jason.
Yes.
AJ DeBonsa expects to be in the top 25 at BYU. He and Team USA destroyed Jordan 140-67. In the round of 16 yesterday at the FIBA U19 World Championships, AJ only played 11 minutes, had 7 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists in that blowout. Team USA faces Canada tomorrow in the quarterfinals.
Speaking of Canada, Delaney Gibb scored a team-high 21 points on 8 of 16 shooting in just 20 minutes for Team Canada.
21!
In an 82-46 win over the Dominican Republic in the FIBA AmeriCup. Gibb and Team Canada will face Colombia in the quarterfinals tomorrow.
Let's go Delaney. Suli Davis of BYU Women's Volleyball, also competing for Team USA, had 1 kill in the United States, 3-1 win over Spain at the U19 World Championships in Croatia. Davis and Team USA, I should probably continue, shouldn't I, Jason? Play again later today against Peru.
Long, dramatic pause.
It was very important. We wanted to give it its proper pause before. Former BYU pitcher Mason Olsen was acquired by the Toronto Blue Jays and assigned to their Florida Complex League. Olsen was most recently pitching in the Frontier League with the New York Boulders, where he posted a 2.79 ERA in 42 innings of work. So congratulations to Mason.
And good luck to Zach Blair and Patrick Fishburne, former BYU men's golf standouts. They tee off today at the John Deere Classic on the PGA Tour. Still on the way, the newest Deep Blue featuring BYU cross-country star Casey Klinger, how he was able to achieve his goal of winning a national championship. Stay with us on BYU Sports Nation. Welcome back to BYU Sports Nation live in Studio B. Cross-country star Casey Klinger always had a goal to win a national championship at BYU. He has discovered and achieved other goals in pursuit of that championship. This is Deep Blue with Casey Klinger.
Casey has a very high level of determination and commitment, and he likes the results of diligent effort. He takes this approach in every aspect of his life.
He knew that the best that he ran, the better the team was going to be in cross country. And his freshman year, he ended up being our number one placer at nationals when we, as a team, finished in third place.
He was interviewed at the end of that race, and they asked him in the interview, why are you doing this? Why would you be willing to leave right now when you're so successful and so fit to go and serve a mission for 2 years? Aren't you worried about that? And his response was, I just feel like if I go and serve the Lord for 2 years, that everything's going to be okay. And that's what I put my trust and faith in. Everything's going to be okay.
About a month before I finished my mission, I was sitting in church at sacrament meeting, and I opened up my tablet disobediently and checked Facebook to see that my team had won the cross country national title. And it rocked me.
He was overjoyed by the fact that the team got it done, but there was a deep sadness in him that he was not part of that team for our inaugural national championship.
Like, oh man, like, I could have been there. And those thoughts kind of seeped in. I just remember praying that I could have the right headspace. I knew I was so close to being done with my mission, and these 2 years were so important to me, and that I would be able to have that eternal perspective and just be able to be happy for my team and finish my mission strong.
I know that it became a very, very high priority item for him to win a national championship and to guide his team to a national championship before it was all said and done.
I came home from my mission more motivated than ever, and it was all about defending that title. But I also needed to find a wife and start a family. So those were the two goals, defend the title and find me an internal companion.
Our first conversation was in the elevator, and it was of him complimenting me on my pants, my bell-bottom jeans.
Not my smoothest moment, but I think I said, I like your pants.
And I thought he was the weirdest person ever. Just, I'm like, okay, who compliments girls on their pants? I just thought it was kind of a weird thing, but... yeah, that was our first conversation. But it did work. And I was the one that got his phone number, so I just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah, I think it was about a year later, and we got married. We didn't quite defend the title. We took 7th 2 years in a row. Those were some tough years. I wanted that title. The next year, we took 3rd, so we were getting closer, but not quite where I wanted to be and where the team wanted to be. And then... I ended up getting injured, so I ended up redshirting for an entire year. I got surgery on my foot in October, and then about 6 months later, I finally was able to start training and running again, and I ended up qualifying to race at the Olympic trials in the 10,000 meter. I ended up running well. I placed 5th, and it kind of gave me that spark, that hope that I was back. I'm coming back.
He had shared with us in the summer that he had a vision for the team, and he talked about the build.
From the start of the summer, we had 16 weeks to build our house, to build a championship team. And it started with the foundation, with the basement, and a lot of miles, a lot of long tempo runs. And as the weeks progressed, we built the main floor and put up the walls and put on the roof. And we started picking up the pace and started racing and started doing speed workouts. And when it was time to move into the house, it was time to race the nationals.
We knew the national championship was going to be tight. Oklahoma State really was the favorite. I think my guys took it personal. I think they actually went out, started a little too fast, because when we did the first score check 2K into this 10K race, we were ahead by about 45 points. That's about like a 3-touchdown lead in a football game in the first quarter.
I had been preparing and building for this moment for years. My team, we had this perfect build, this perfect season of months of hard work and training and belief.
Every year, he said, Mom, I went in thinking we could win a national title. And we know from 9th grade until now that several years have elapsed, but he was finally able to accomplish that goal with his team.
We did it. We planned this, we executed it, and we did it.
After the race, he told me, Mom, he hugged me and said, that's all I ever wanted was that national team title.
11 seasons is a roller coaster. Highest highs, the lowest lows. It takes phenomenal mental fortitude. And that championship was the payday.
We went out to take pictures with the trophies on the course, and my coach hands me his phone. It's my dad. And he informed me that my wife, Morgan, who was 9 months pregnant at the time, was going to labor.
From that moment on, it was the celebration had ended, and he was preparing for a new celebration, that of welcoming his new son to the family.
And I was on the plane to Provo within an hour and a half of that phone call. I was just praying that I'd make it home in time. I did not want to miss this.
3 days later, as he held his little boy in his arms, I think he realized, this is also what I've always wanted.
It was the biggest weekend of his life. You don't get to carry around the trophy. You have it in your heart, but you don't get to carry that trophy with you. When I see him with Colton, that's the real trophy. He is just as good a dad as he is a runner, and that he will carry with him physically forever.
He knows what's important, and he knows how to handle tough things, and he transitioned that into being a father, and I hope our son idolizes him one day.
I've just felt so much love, and you know, I'm gonna put everything into this next chapter because my family's everything to me. And, you know, the most important build is starting. They're gonna see Dad run a lot of more races, and we're gonna find that balance of, you know, achieving my goals, but also achieving our family goals.
Feeling all the things now. Yeah. Amazing stuff. And what an incredible push for a championship as he then celebrates by welcoming his first son into the world.
Yeah, and what an amazing analogy, him talking about the build, and that it you start with the foundation, and once you've got the foundation, then you can build the walls, and then you work your way up, and you put in the time and you put in the work, and then it pays off the way it did for him in terms of his race, but also with his family. What a fantastic story.
Also, for any people who are seeking a wife, apparently you just have to compliment their pants. I thought that was a hilarious story.
That was pretty funny. That was pretty
great
funny.
Stuff. And shout out to our Deep Blue crew for always doing an elite job. I mean that sincerely. Still on the way, which game do you believe is the toughest on the BYU football schedule in 2025? More responses to that question of the day on BYUSN.
BYU Sports Nation is presented by The BYU Store, official outfitter of BYU fans everywhere.
Our question of the day, which game do you believe is the toughest on the BYU football schedule? Caleb Plew on X answers, rivalry games are the great equalizer. No matter what either team has done by October 18th, the BYU-Utah game will be anyone's match. At Jeremiah_Hale on X says, December 6th, Big 12 championship game. I'm surprised that didn't make its way to the elite voice of the day.
That's what I expected to be the elite voice of the day as soon as I saw it. No offense to our actual elite voice of the day winner.
Okay, at Bashford Mike on X, who says, the first round of the playoffs at Alabama will be tough, but I like our chances. Oh, on the road at Alabama. Holy cow.
We want Bama.
Jason, you take the elite voice of the day.
Yeah, elite voice of the day presented by PAX Healthcare Elevated from Andy_Cooper7 on X. Iowa State coming straight off the Utah game and having to travel to Ames. There isn't a tougher test on the schedule. That's what we said.
That three-game stretch, home to Utah, then at Iowa State, bye, then at Texas Tech. Can BYU have a winning record in that three-game stretch? If so, Jason, I like their chances to compete for a Big 12 title. No kidding. Like that three-game stretch.
Let's speak it into existence,
come on,
my friend.
Today's Rise and Shout-Out presented by Mountain America, the official credit union of BYU Athletics.
How about giving it to Delaney Gibb? We mentioned this in headlines. Scored a team-high 21 points for Team Canada in their win over the Dominican Republic. Very efficient. Shot 50% from the field, 8 of 16. She was on fire yesterday.
I just love that she has an opportunity to display that at such a high level on that stage.
Right.
Well done, Delaney. Before we go, we would like to wish each and every one of you across BYU Sports Nation a very happy and safe 4th of July. However you celebrate it, certainly with Hans Olsen, it's snuggles and barbecue. You can add whatever else you like to that.
I'm going over to Hans's house for both. A Hans snuggle and some of the barbecue.
Let's go. He didn't invite me yet, Jason, so.
I thought we were both invited. I'm not sure I was invited. That doesn't mean I'm not showing up.
Oh, self-invite? Okay, we're just self-invitations. It's all good. Our thanks to today's guest, Mr. Olsen himself.
Conversation continues 24/7 on X, Instagram, and Facebook. All of our shows on demand at BYUSN.com.
For Jason Shepherd, I'm Spencer Linton. A shout out to Kenneth Rooks because, you know, USA, Jason.
Absolutely.
Silver medalist. Enjoy the holiday and go America. Reminder, we'll see you back here live on Monday as we get set for Big 12 Media Days in Dallas. Go Cougs!
Go Cougs and go America!
Yes.